Okay, this is May Breslow on the second part. I think I don't have to remind you of those who remember the John Lennon murder, December the 8th. It was just a half a year ago that Mark David Chapman has never been brought to trial. That's hushed up, too. There isn't any evidence. This hanky-panky, and I'm going very slowly and emphasizing it, is the kind of phenomena that took place in Nazi Germany of trying to get the guilty off on some, well, later Hitler just opened the jails and let certain people out and made room for other people to come in. But the pretense up to 1933 was very tricky until you had all-out fascism. And those of you that were too young to study the John Kennedy case or Martin Luther King case with James Earl Ray or Sirhan Sirhan's trial with the shooting of Robert Kennedy, there were the same kinds of techniques, the same use of manipulation of the courts and similarities of blaming it on one single loner drifter and ignoring mountains of evidence that came in from people all over the world that would have solved the crime. But the assumption is that they want to solve the crime. And I said before, you have to accept it as a fact that the investigators are the foxes guarding the chicken house, and that the necessity to solve these crimes and to maintain your history is up to you and me to put on cassettes, articles, letters, write to public officials, and keep the record going in your own families, discuss it with each other and friends and relatives, and realize that the phenomena that's taking place isn't a single thing. It's gone before, and it's going to escalate so fast and get worse that you won't be able to keep track of it later. Now, this same article went into the stalling, as I said before, of the examination of John Hinckley Jr. He's in a facility now. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this week, "The Hinckley Case Might Revive the Insanity Issue." I didn't think the insanity issue was over. And the article says the lawyers for John Hinckley say they may use an insanity defense against federal charges, federal, that he tried to kill President Reagan. And if they do, his trial will rekindle an old legal debate of whether the defense makes sense. It's based on what they call the Brawner rule, that a person isn't responsible for an act committed while as a result of a mental disease of defect. He lacks substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness of his conduct or to conform his conduct to the requirements of the law. I doubt for any second that this person didn't know and didn't have the ability to understand at that moment what he was doing and doesn't have a disease or a defect of any single kind. The Washington Post says officials expect the mental test to continue for several more weeks, and while no indictment will be going on for months, he was transferred from Butner, North Carolina Federal Correctional Facility to Duke University in Durham, North Carolina for further neurological tests. They wanted to get more sophisticated medical equipment than there was at Butner. Well, many of you, again, don't remember the struggle when Butner was built. It was the most controversial prison in the American prison system, and there was a lot of question about the massive amount of money and equipment and what in the heck they were going to put there, and there were protests at the time against Butner, and now that it's built and it was so expensive it's operational, they say they don't have the equipment for sophisticated tests, and it, as I say, this was a controversial institution to begin with, so he's at the sophisticated place where I assure you that the sophisticated tests will find, after months and thousands of dollars of investigations and the best minds in the country, that he really, in fact, wanted to prove something to Jody Foster, and that's why he shot Ronald Reagan. That will be, he'll be drooling in the mouth confessing that, I guess, until he dies, because she resembled his mother, and his mother also was called Jody, and I may get into that in a little while. The way he aimed those shots, hitting at the armpit, because people that wear vests, bulletproof vests, can be shot in the head, like Brady, or through the armpit, where you don't have the vest, you should have bulletproof sleeves, and the bullet went down in near the heart. the way he shot in 3 seconds, these four people, the way they fell, I seriously doubt that this Hinckley had neurological problems. Now, the FBI report that came out, quoted in the Post, said there was, the title, as I said, was no evidence he was stalking. And it goes on to say the investigators have found little evidence that he was stalking Reagan or any other political figure. Well, you don't have to have a lot of evidence. If they found little, did they find any at all? But they wrote they found little evidence. They mentioned that he registered at the Capitol Hilton Hotel in September in Washington, D.C. He was back at the Quality Inn Hotel. He was at the Hilton September 27th and 28th of 1980. He was at the Quality Inn on Capitol Hill in October 17th and 19th, and he was in Washington February the 10th to the 11th and February 16th to 17th. So that was 4 trips to Washington, D.C., and they said, but we found no evidence these visits were tied to the attack on Reagan. Well, they have met hotels, they have the dates, but who did he see? If the last day that Reagan was shot, he got phone calls, waited for messages, made phone calls out, I don't believe the FBI would care to trace exactly how he got into town or out of town. And it's interesting that he stayed at the Capitol Hilton Hotel. Ronald Reagan was shot at the Washington Hilton, and I wonder if there's the same floor plan or the same employees or the same staff that would tip him off being as he was occupying the Hilton Hotel. Who did he see on those many days? How did he get into town? Was it his car that he left at his parents' home before he came to California for 24 hours before he came to New York? Did he travel by plane? That takes more money. Was it by train? Was it on bus where he was seen talking to people coming from California? How can the FBI and Justice Department indicate without filling in those days and exact circumstances whether or not there was a shooting or a link? And that goes back when they say there was no evidence to indicate that any visits were tied to the attack, and there's no evidence so far of a conspiracy, which they also published in the report. I refer many times to a document from the Warren Commission hearings that I've had on many broadcasts, but it's one of the few things that's apropos of repeating. It was a correspondence between two members of the Warren Commission, August the 14th, 1964, a month before the Warren Report came out, of Bert Griffin to Howard Willens. And I got this from the National Archives, from David Lifton. And on the chapter of Jack Ruby and whether or not there was a conspiracy that he got into the jail to kill Lee Harvey Oswald, the only suspect and alleged assassin, this is the memo he wrote. He said, the preface and conclusion of the report, Warren Report, their report, states that our commission found no evidence that anyone assisted Jack Ruby in the shooting of Lee Oswald. Certainly, it is true that there is insufficient evidence to conclude that any particular person assisted Ruby. Nonetheless, we have not conducted an investigation which would effectively exhaust the possibilities. This is 1 month before the report was written, but it would exhaust the possibilities that someone did assist Jack Ruby, even if their assistance were unwitting, helping him in that jail, not knowing that Ruby had the gun. Inasmuch as Ruby is still alive and will continue to dicker concerning his fate, I think it is a mistake for the commission to make a statement which indicates its investigation in that regard is exhaustive. I would simply state the facts that what we have uncovered and remain silent on the issue of whether anybody not connected with the assassination of John Kennedy could have assisted Ruby in the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald. So they would suggest, they recommended that we say they've investigated and found no evidence of a conspiracy because we have not investigated it, but don't suggest that no one aided or encouraged Ruby, they added, because this is a risk we can't incur because they had an idea that Ruby had help getting in the Dallas jail, and if they say no one aided or encouraged, later it may come out. So the way they agreed to write the report was, we have found no evidence, because they agreed, the Warren Commission writers and lawyers, these were members of the bar and CIA lawyers writing this, that the commission has not gone into it. So we'll say we found no evidence because we haven't looked for it. Now, another point of this FBI report is that they said the results of the month-long federal investigation has been forwarded to the prosecutors, that Hinckley was only confused. He apparently used money from his wealthy parents. He led a nomadic existence, and he generally wandered aimlessly from coast to coast. Now, if they say that he apparently used money from his parents, did he or didn't he? When my children went through college or needed support, their fathers supported them. If they went on trips, they went there. If they had a job, they had a job. This Hinckley had no job and no means of support. But if somebody was giving them money and they were traveling to Chicago or St. Louis or Tennessee or New Haven or Texas or Denver, Nashville and Atlanta, Georgia and Chicago and to California and New York and back to Dallas, Texas and back to New Haven and back to Dallas, Texas, I would know when they take a trip that those trips cost money. So when they say the parents apparently gave them the money, did they or didn't they? And that is a very important point that they pass over, because if they don't account for every cent of what he had, how are we to believe where else he was and what else they're covering up? And this is their 1,000-page report, and it's very sloppy. They ignore the hotels, and I'll mention some of those he was in it. The Sharon Hotel in Ohio. He was at a Sharon Hotel in New Haven, Connecticut, a Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C., two other hotels in Washington, D.C. I telephoned one of them this evening before I came to KLRB to see what the rate is. I said I wanted to go there this summer, and I wanted to know what their rate is at this inn. And it's between $40 and $80 a night, the Quality Inn, if you want to call them, in Washington, D.C. He was at the Quality Inn in February for 2 days, the Sheraton Hotel in Ohio, 2 nights, the Sheraton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee for 3 days, from September to October, the Quality Inn in Washington, October 17th and 18th, the Park Central Hotel in Washington, 2 days, the Sheraton Hotel. Now, those aren't crummy little joints. They said he's a nomadic person who lives on these fast foods. That's part of their report. How do we know what dining rooms he ate in those hotels, or room service with food to the rooms? Those are the hotels those are only the hotels that came out of one article this week. And I have many of them just to give you an idea of the kind of places, the crummy places he was staying at. So the report says he apparently used money from his home, and apparently isn't the answer, and he generally wandered aimlessly. That isn't the answer either. And they go into the Jodie Foster thing about his mother having the same nickname, Jodie, and how as a young person she looked like Jodie Foster. Well, if you've ever read The Control of Candy Jones, one of the important points of the Candy Jones story was that they regressed her in her child back to her childhood, the CIA did, and they took her to a time where she used to play in the room alone with a little doll named Arlene. And they asked her about this doll, and she played back and forth with it, and she was comfortable with the name. So they decided to give her the name Arlene Grant, because she was hypnotized by a doctor in Oakland, California, and regressed back there and used that name. And the point is that the association of people like past childhoods or your mother or an actress who has a similar name could be the modus for a man who changes the whole course of American history, who shoots this man, this fellow that's been in for a short time, and puts in the director of the CIA, and Alexander Haig, handpicked by Nazis from Germany, Fritz Kramer, who's still working in the Pentagon. That is the way the modus operandi those. He didn't shoot at Ronald Reagan and the others to please Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster, the symbolism or an association of her mother or his mother and the names may have been very thought out as a programmed assassin. That is the way it's done. That isn't the exception. That is the rule to have the similarities of appearance or name and regress and link it to some fascination and trigger people to be mind-controlled through the association of these particular names. Another thing that the FBI report said that we were afraid he was stalking Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter, and we thought we had another Arthur Bremer on our case. Those of you who don't remember the Arthur Bremer case, he shot at George Wallace in May of 72, just prior to the election of Richard Nixon, and knocked out millions of very conservative votes that would vote for Richard Nixon and not George McGovern. He didn't need that majority, but at the time Nixon thought he needed a majority and had to be a little bit ahead. And the FBI said, we thought we had one of these people that stalked Nixon Wallace, and he was with in front of where Carter was or Reagan, but it wasn't that case at all, and Artie Bremer left a diary. Well, the stalking story, again, is a cover-up. At the time John Kennedy was killed, they said that Lee Harvey shot at General Walker in April 63, which wasn't true, and Walker worked with the same Minutemen and the Posse Comitatus group of Klan people in the Texas area that Hinckley came from Dallas, Texas. Wallace was shot at through the window in April, and John Kennedy was shot in November. And then they said Lee Harvey Oswald was a loner with no political motive because he shot the far right. That was General Walker, and Kennedy, who was supposed to be far left for Dallas, Texas. And then in the case of Nixon and Bremer, Bremer was shot. No motive given for shooting Bremer other than we know it gave Nixon the votes. But Nixon was in one location where Bremer was seen up in Canada, and he stayed at the Waldorf Astoria and Marriott Inn and other fancy hotels. And then he stalked, Bremer stalked Wallace in Maryland. And then after Wallace was shot and couldn't run for the office, he wasn't killed but permanently paralyzed, they said this wasn't a political motive because first he goes to see one guy and then he goes to see the other, so therefore it isn't political because he just can't decide on it. He doesn't have a particular person in mind, but he just shoots. Now, in every one of these cases, the same people, the far right extremist group, is moving higher up in the game of musical chairs in this country. Every single bullet gets them closer to the presidency and the vice presidency, which is CIA Director Bush of the Trilateral Council of Foreign Relations, with his Eastern interlocking links and his Houston, Texas, the oil, the Friends of the Middle East, and his Saudi Arabian and oil connections from the Southwest. He's the perfect marriage of the Southwest with the Yale and Eastern Seaboard. And so they say, well, Hinckley would go in the same cities where Jimmy Carter was. There were three of them. Or he would be where Ronald Reagan was. He went to New York at the time. Reagan was there before. But because he was in town where Reagan was or Carter was, he just couldn't make up his mind. So it isn't political. He just happens to be on the block in the city. And couldn't he just be testing the Secret Service? Did he know one Secret Service man who called and told him, just like Jack Ruby got a telephone call, picked up his gun, put it in his pocket, left his place, and walked right into the Dallas jail and down the ramp just minutes before Lee Harvey Oswald came down an elevator, and the lone assassin, the alleged assassin, was gunned down 2 days after Kennedy was killed. Isn't there one Secret Service man that was on these other trips that when Carter leaves office, the Secret Service man goes on to the next team, they don't leave, that could tip him off that he knew, that winked the other way, that saw the diversionary? Isn't there somebody that is in that agency? And there were traitors in the White House that bugged Richard Nixon, Mr. Butterfield and Alexander Haig, that pushed Nixon out so that Haig could be commander of the White House for those brief moments to get his lips on the presidency and the White House. Weren't those people, and couldn't they be in the Secret Service all along these trips that Hinckley was around, so that when he got in, that person dropped the banner and let him through and had no credentials. So the press stayed behind a rope. He was acting really silly, and nobody removed him, and he was allowed to do the shootings. Now, this article goes on to say the law enforcement sources concluded, as I say, he was not stalking. Reason, they found little evidence for that. In their 1,200-page report, they said they admitted that many of Hinckley's travels are otherwise unexplained. Now, if you have locations unexplained, finances unexplained, calls unexplained, telephone calls out of telephone booths that he was seen, telephone calls into hotel rooms. How in the world, and yet this is what they're doing, they are going to throw at to you a one loner, displaced nomad. Nomads, you think of people really wandering around without roots, and this guy was well-heeled and well-financed with unexplained money. So they admit, even in their 1,200-page report, that even though he was, in quotes, confused, nomadic, wandering aimlessly coast to coast, in quotes, many of Hinckley's travels are otherwise unexplained, and that's one of the otherwises that will be open for investigators like myself for years to come. If the travels are unexplained, and if the money is unexplained, how can they write a report like this and throw it out for the news media to assure you that nobody stalked Ronald Reagan, that he just happened to be on that street with somebody who looked like him, another person who was a known threat to the Secret Service, but considered he wasn't a threat at that moment, with this discrepancy in bullet trajectories and discrepancies in the early reports of whether it was a .38 or a .22, and photographs from across the street that have never been developed, and ear sounds of witnesses of shots coming from another direction, and indications of different kinds of bullets, and a man who gets through being prosecuted who can travel with weapons, and if he's caught, get solid off and not under any list. So this report has words like they found little evidence, just a little evidence, that he was stalking Reagan, that he generally wandered aimlessly. I looked up the word generally in the dictionary, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary I keep at my desk, and generally is a vague or an inadequate statement, that he generally wandered aimlessly. He apparently had money from his parents. He doesn't seem to be stalking Ronald Reagan or anybody. He doesn't seem to be stalking anybody. And the law enforcement said they will continue to assert that he acted alone. This is their report. They will assert. And again, the definition of assert is to state positively, to defend or claim or maintain against opposition. So there's a contradiction to assert that John Hinckley Jr. acted alone if there's just a little evidence he stalked, if he generally wandered, if he apparently had most of his money from his parents, but they are not sure. So that in between all of their acclamations of being the most thorough examination that Washington has done for the FBI in years, and they're sensitive to the scrutiny of critics like myself, they are fools to say they are investigating for history. They are just a bunch of thieves taking money. They are liars interpreting. And I can't say strongly enough that this assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan is simply one more pattern, and I hope that you listeners and people that subscribe to the tapes can review books and articles of these past shootings and hold them up parallel to the Hinckley case and read the exclamations of the most thorough investigations and positively this and that. Now, Timothy McCarthy, the Secret Service agent, and Ronald Reagan, who was shot, they're federal. One is a federal employee and the other is the president. So far, they are going to charge or have charged him with these two, but no charges have been filed in the case of shooting James Brady or Thomas Delahanty so far. Now, the FBI, in their very thorough 1,200-page summary of what's going on this first month, it took a month to come to all this, said that except for brief talks after his arrest, which were very brief because you remember he was flown to an Army base in Quantico, Virginia, the Marine base. So he's never in an ordinary jail with anybody else. They said, we have not interviewed Hinckley, except for a very few brief moments. They have not interviewed him at all, and I'll bet you almost anything they haven't asked him any single one of the questions that I'm bringing up tonight. So they continue to assert that he acted alone, that he allegedly shot Ronald Reagan at the Washington Hilton Hotel, and they said, in quotes, there are no facts revealed in this case that would point to a conspiracy. As of May the 6th, there are no facts that would point to a conspiracy, and I accuse them of telling outright lies. I think there are a combination of motives, good motives behind this that involve the Hinckley family, their finances, and the organizations they fund, and George Bush of the CIA, and Alexander Haig of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA. There is a can of worms that I've been talking about the last weeks and will continue to do, and modus operandi for the shooting taking place. Where was the training done for shooting? He belonged to organizations where the shooting could be done, where he could be trained to shoot. Just last week, a Joseph Christopher was arrested in Georgia, at Fort Benning, Georgia, on a charge, and he was taken to nearby Columbus, Georgia, on the charge of killing several black men in Buffalo, New York. And then he said, I also killed four men in New York City. Just before Christmas Eve, about December the 22nd. He gave a very nice Christmas to four families and gunned four people on streets in New York City for no reason at all. And when Joseph Christopher was arrested at Fort Benning, he has no fancy attorneys, I don't believe, and he says that he's killed the 10 black men and one Hispanic man. He was bragging about these various deaths. He said, I had to do it. Well, there was an article in the New York Times this week, rifle shells found in the home are tied to Buffalo suspect. So they went up to his house in Buffalo, New York, where Private Christopher, he's in the Army, this murder of black people, lives with his parents until he joined the Army last November. And they did a search of the family's hunting camp 40 miles away, where they found parts of weapons and live 22 caliber ammunition, as well as spent shells. Now, Buffalo, New York, has been a headquarters of Nazi activity in the United States, as well as various other cities. Buffalo, New York, have many articles of overt, violent Nazi activities in Buffalo. This fellow is in the United States Army on leave, killing blacks, saying, I had to do it. And his family's home, it wasn't the home where they found the ammunition. The article says home. It was a hunting camp. So who else goes to the private hunting camp of Joseph Christopher in Buffalo, New York? Was it David Berkowitz? Was it Mark David Chapman? Was it John Hinckley? Was it Joseph Franklin? How many of these wandering assassins with these deep religious convictions could be training Nazis or posse comitatus or far right wings at hunting camps such as his parents owned? To make matters worse, Joseph Christopher had said it was his home's father's home, his parents, it must be a stepfather, because another article said that his father was an exterminator, ran these ovens, extermination ovens in the, I call them extermination ovens, for the city in Buffalo, New York, the disposal ovens there, and I got terrible feelings about the disposals in the concentration camps. Well, I will do more on Hinckley each week because I have a lot of material. And while there's other news that's very important, including the French election tonight in Mitterrand, very important election, and I hope Margaret Thatcher is next and Reagan and Bush and Haig are next before they destroy planet Earth. But it's very nice that the French were able to get out and have that election. I'll go into that. But the more quiet the Hinckley case is, I will pursue it because I am ornery, and I don't like this quietness. There's Brady suffering. There's people that have suffered, and the family has such tentacles into the bowels of the Texas, Denver, Colorado intelligence community that I'm not going to sit back until we find out why the silence, why the shifting or the attempt to shift the federal judge, and what is going on in this case. In the meantime, I'll save the articles and share them with you each week till we open or keep opening this up, as I did when the Watergate stories broke. I was talking about them over and over for 9 months before James McCord broke that story and kept this alive, both in writing on it and talking about it on KLRB. In the meantime, I'll share these with you and keep sharing other articles with you about these matters. Take care of yourselves. And this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'll be back with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.